Good morning, everyone. And on behalf of the Office of Community Engagement, welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the Indigenous people on whose ancestral land Syracuse University now stands. It is my pleasure to be the moderator with you this morning. This morning, we're really excited to have with us the directors of Syracuse Stage. Jill Anderson serves as the managing director of Syracuse Stage and has been with the stage since 2016. Jill is responsible for Stage's $7.5 million operating budget and has oversight of fundraising, marketing, and operational matters within the organization. In addition to her work at Stage, Jill is an instructor in the theater management program of the Syracuse University Department of Drama, building on her work with high school and college students elsewhere, including the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival. Anderson was recognized as part of the Central New York Business Journal's 40 Under 40 Awards in 2017 and has served on numerous municipal and nonprofit boards. Prior to joining Syracuse Stage, Jill spent a decade as general manager at the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center in Waterford, Connecticut. During her tenure, the O'Neill completed a $7 million capital campaign in campus expansion, doubled its operating budget, and was honored with the 2015 National Medal of Arts and the 2010 Regional Theater Tony Award. Under the O'Neill's aegis, Jill has also developed the Baltic Playwrights Conference, an annual international new play development retreat held in Huma, Estonia. Previously, Jill spent 5 years in the production office at Washington, D.C.'s Arena Stage after working as a stage manager in Minnesota, New Mexico, and Massachusetts. Jill's delighted to call Central New York home, but will always be a proud cheesehead, originally hailing from Marshfield, Wisconsin. Our other director we welcome today is Bob Hupp. Bob is in his sixth season as artistic director of Syracuse Stage. He recently directed Eureka Day, Annapurna, Tally's Folly, Amadeus, Noises Off, Next to Normal, and the wonderful The Three Musketeers for Syracuse Stage. Prior to coming to Central New York, Bob spent 17 seasons as the producing artistic director of Arkansas Repertory Theater in Little Rock. He directed over 30 productions for Arkansas Rep, ranging from Hamlet to Les Miserables to The Grapes of Wrath. In New York City, Bob directed the American premieres of Glenn Maxwell's The Lifeblood and Wolf Pit for the Phoenix Theater Ensemble. He also served for 9 seasons as the artistic director of the Obie Award-winning Jean Couteau Repertory. At the Couteau, Robert's directing credits include works by Buckner, Wilder, Couteau, Shaw, Wedekind, and the premieres of the Bentley Milho version of Brecht's Mother Courage and Her Children, Seamus Haney's The Cure at Troy, and Eduardo De Filippo's Napoli Millionaire. I'm getting my workout this morning. He has held faculty positions at Pennsylvania's Dickinson College and in Arkansas at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock and Hendricks College. Robert served as vice president of the board of directors of the Theater Communications Group and has served on funding panels for the New York State Council of the Arts. National Endowment of the Arts, the Theater Communications Group, New Jersey State Council of the Arts, and New York City Department of Cultural Affairs. While in Arkansas, Bob was named both Nonprofit Executive of the Year by the Arkansas Business Publishing Group and Individual Artist of the Year by the Arkansas Arts Council. He and his wife, Clea, ride herd over a blended family of 5 children, 1 dog, and 2 cats. It is my pleasure this morning to welcome both Jill Anderson and Bob Hupp from Syracuse Stage.
Morning, everyone, and thank you, Sydney. Sorry if we threw you a couple of foreign town names and all kinds of things for your pleasure this morning. Great to see everybody here. So many friends, so many stage supporters, so many folks whom we've had the good pleasure to meet around town. So we're grateful to have this chance to be with you today and to talk a little bit not just about the impact of COVID on Syracuse Stage's operation, which has not been fantastic, I will acknowledge, but also to talk about the ways in which we've been able to innovate. And I'll especially compliment my partner here, Bob Hupp, for leading the organization's artistic charge as we really tried new models and a lot of new things over the course of the last 18 months. Let me begin by doing a little screen share and showing you some of the data points, some of the real impact of this era. First of all, I think just for a point of grounding, and so folks are clear about the relationship between Syracuse Stage and the university and the things we endeavor to do in this community. Syracuse Stage and the university are separate entities, separate governance, separate budgets, separate legal identities, but we are so very closely enmeshed. Syracuse Stage is a professional union Actors Equity Association member theater in residence at the university. We share the facility in which the Department of Drama operates, right at the corner of Genesee and Irving, and collaborate pretty deeply for between stage and drama. For example, the professional staff of Syracuse Stage do all of the physical construction, costumes, scenery, props, all those things for the Department of Drama. And our team markets and box office manages for the Department of Drama as well as for Syracuse Stage. In exchange, the university does provide significant financial support, but we still very much need to be proactive in securing about $5 million each year in ticket sales, subscription revenue, and fundraising in order to keep everybody employed and keep the programming we have in place operating. The image you see there is a production that was in that list of the wonderful shows Bob has directed. This is a production of Next to Normal, a modern sort of rock musical that we produced in 2018. Here is our artistic leadership team, where Bob and I lead the organization together and both report directly to the Board of Trustees. Bob has brought together an incredible team of artists to drive forward the programming that we see on stage. You see him there on the left side of your screen. To the right is Kyle Bass, who's very familiar to many of you, a longtime member of this community, a longtime member of Syracuse Stage's leadership team. Kyle, since Bob arrived, served as Associate Artistic Director, has recently shifted his activities, and he has a new title. He is our resident playwright, which means he is freed from a lot of the administrative duties and meetings and things like that, but is actively creating new work all the time and continues to consult with Bob and really helping drive the artistic work of the organization. In the middle is Melissa Crespo, who now is in that role of Associate Artistic Director. Melissa has been a guest director with Stage in the past, has a really impeccable national reputation, starting back almost 20 years ago when she and I both were at Arena Stage at the same time early in our respective careers. So this is sort of the triumvirate who really curates and shapes the work you see on our stages and in our community. Amadeus, sort of a touchstone for us. This was the play we opened and closed on March 13th, 2020. Also directed by Bob, in my opinion, one of the most impressive works I've done on our stage. And it was really an incredibly emotional night when, you know, the drumbeat of what was happening in the world started to make itself clear. And we knew we had one night to perform this. And folks were starting to already decide not to come. But that Friday the 13th, this beautiful production managed to be captured by WCNY. We very quickly reached out to Mitch Gelman and said, can you get here? He said, yep, my folks are all news producers. We're used to acting quickly. They came, they filmed it. It was an incredible night in the room. And we were able, because of that quick work on CNY's part, to share this with our subscribers and our community for the next weeks as the world changed and the sand shifted right underneath our feet. All right, here's where your managing director has a little bit of fun. The economic impact of this pandemic has been staggering, and yet we fared so much better than many of our peers. You'll see a graph in the top left corner of this slide, which just shows our annual operating budgets in a typical year and in a COVID year. Our budget in FY20 was around $7.2 million. We were so fortunate that even in the height of the pandemic, our income and our expenses were able to move downward in parallel. That is one of the reasons we're able to survive. In a way, some of our peers are having existential crises around the country and around the region. We were able to count on the steady support of the university. Our patrons were remarkably generous in continuing, those who were able to, their donations, their contributed income. I know a number of you on this call are Circles members and Angels donors. And also we gave folks the opportunity when our productions couldn't go forward to choose to convert that ticket price into a donation to Syracuse Stage, keep it on file as essentially store credit, or to request a refund. And patrons were remarkably generous. In addition, we were eligible for and received about a $730,000 PPP loan in the first wave of COVID relief from the federal government. But you look at that income number in the top chart, not our total budget, but our income fell from $3.3 million to $538,000 in 1 year. That has a pretty substantial impact. But because of the generosity of our patrons, the steadiness of the university's funding and that PPP loan, we've been able to maintain full staffing throughout, which I think is one of the things I'm most proud of about our pandemic response and has really allowed us to, as Bob will address later, but it's allowed us to restart and welcome people back in a much less clunky way, in a smoother way. We have not had the staffing challenges that other organizations have had, because we were in a position to be able to retain the full staff. Bob will tell you exactly what they were doing in a few slides. Subscriptions were wildly off. Even though folks were generous, as I said, as long as income and expenses moved in parallel, we were able to be okay. A lot of data on this slide, I'll not hold you responsible for all of it in the quiz afterward, but showing you really the differences in each of these charts from the 2019-20 season, the one that was upended by COVID midway through, and 2020-21, in which we were not able to have any people at the theater at all. You can assume correctly, not everybody made that journey with us. You look in that top left slide where we would typically have 3,800, 3,700 subscribers. Not everybody was up for what would unfold, the digital journey, the virtual journey. And so our subscription numbers and income fell nearly by half. We did offer a digital subscription, the bottom left chart, that fell substantially short of what we thought it might do. I think a lot of people had a lot of reasons to not want to stare at their screen all day, nor to necessarily engage in that technological journey with us, but it has obviously had a substantial impact. And when we planned the 21-22 season, the one we're in now, we anticipated a stronger return, as so many of us did in so many parts of our lives from the pandemic. We thought we'd be further out of the woods. We thought we'd be looking at fuller houses, and folks are still quite hesitant to come back. We would normally budget, for example, a holiday production to sell approximately 90%, 95% even of its available tickets, and it would often sell more than 100%, which is a fun thing. This year we budgeted it in the 80% range. And in fact, our most recent projection, we're taking that down substantially. Even compared to our board approved budget this year, we're likely to be down $1 million in revenue. We have since received another PPP loan. And you may have heard in the news about a program called the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant. This is something with bipartisan leadership from John Cornyn of Texas and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, and New York's Chuck Schumer got on board early on, and it has really been a lifeline for organizations like ours, as well as for things like music venues. We're a sector that was among the first to close, and we are the slowest to return, given the various restrictions involved in doing work like ours. So we, again, as long as income and expenses are moving in parallel, we can get to the other side of this. Another couple of data points for you about how far ahead we might typically sell subscriptions. Top left, going in reverse chronological order, 6 weeks before the first play of the season, this year, we had sold about 2,300 subscriptions. In 1920, the last time we had a normal year, though it was upended during Amadeus, we had sold most of the subscriptions we would by that point. We had sold 3,600 subscriptions. So we are still very much clawing back from this drop, though we had five consecutive years of growth in numbers of subscribers, number of subscriptions sold, et cetera. The bottom chart I find pretty interesting. It's something we use internally. The red line is the goal for how many subscriptions we would have sold by any given point in the year. The green line, obviously the lowest one, is where we are. And so you can see that we're not on track. I will not beat that horse much more, but you'll see we have had a pretty significant impact in this year, even though we're supposedly in the recovery mode. I will turn things over to Bob to tell you a little bit more about the art and the innovations he and the artistic and production team have put in place in the last year.
Good morning, everybody. It's wonderful to see you. I'll be electronically here this morning. Jill said she was going to play Vanna White here and continue to advance these slides. So we'll continue to coordinate that. But thanks for joining us this morning. I'm glad to share with you a little bit about what's been going on with Syracuse Stage on the artistic side and our public facing work as we continue to navigate what continue to be uncharted and uncertain waters. If I cut right to the chase and know that, right now Syracuse Stage is in a position of strength and has remained artistically vibrant in new ways and in innovative ways. But here we are in December, wrapping up the first half of our 49th season. And we have a production of Matilda the Musical running on our stage in co-production with the University's Department of Drama. We are doing a production that has 30 actors in it we're finding attendance to be actually much higher than we anticipated, with lots of protocols in place about keeping people safe that are dictated to us not only by our actors' union, but by a lot of the protocols that our peer theaters are using around the country, and of course, regulations and advice given to us by the university, by the county, and by the state of New York. And so here we are producing Matilda the Musical. We have a production of Thoughts of a Colored Man running on Broadway right now that originated at Syracuse Stage and has been running for now quite a while in New York during this pandemic. So right now, Syracuse Stage has a lot to be proud of, a lot to be thankful for, a lot to be grateful for. A lot of that goes back to an incredible staff and a determined staff at Syracuse Stage. We have about 60 employees. And then we bring in so many guest artists from around the country. Their work and their consistent dedication to the craft has been inspiring to Jill and me all year long for the last now what year and a half. But here we are with this big production and a production we're proud of in New York City. And if you look back a year ago, none of that was a certainty. And in fact, everything was up in the air. Jill showed you that slide from Amadeus, which was an exciting, terrifying night all at once. We spent a long time in those first few months realizing what we can't do. We can't do this next play. We can't do once. We can't do Kyle's play. We can't do all the things that we had planned as part of that season. Things just sort of fell apart. And it wasn't until the summer that we really turned that conversation around from, well, all here are all the things we can't do. We're looking at 95% unemployment in our field. We're looking at every theater in the country. There are roughly 1,400 nonprofit theaters in the United States. They were all closed. What all these things about what can't we do? We had to turn that conversation around to what can we do? And that's what really got the ball rolling at Syracuse Stages. Well, we can't do these things, but what can we do? And so we pivoted as quickly as we could. And that's that word pivot is a word we ultimately banned at the theater because we were using it so much. Because everything was that we were pivoting on top of our pivots. The pivots turned into a swivel at a certain point. And I want to mention, too, and acknowledge, too, that the last year and a half has been shaped not just by the pandemic, which has colored so much of what we've done and impacted every aspect of our organization and our field, but also impacting our field nationally. The major conversation has been around issues raised by the murder of George Floyd. And the response, our BIPOC colleagues around the country, over 300 of them came together and created a document called We See You, White American Theater, that was really a call to action for theaters across the country, from Broadway to Syracuse Stage to every theater in all 50 states, to really examine practices related to anti-racism, to equality, to justice in our own organizations internally and how we practice our craft externally. So those conversations really dominated our field. How are we going to manage the pandemic? How are we going to use this time to become more equitable, more anti-racist, more fair, more just, more equitable? And so these were parallel conversations really defining our field all over the past year and a half. And a lot of the work that we're doing at Syracuse Stage, both internally and externally, reflects both of these powerful movements and powerful events that are unprecedented in the life of our relatively young field. So what did we do at Syracuse Stage? Well, we immediately realized we have a staff, we have a theater. The Department of Drama is not closing. We're gonna continue to provide support to the Department of Drama. We're gonna continue to maintain our staff. So we began creating work, like many of our peers did. We began creating work online. And Jill, you can start advancing to some of these slides of work that illustrates the work we did online. That this was something that was new to Syracuse Stage, and we really had a fantastic community partner in Black Cub Productions. We partnered with Black Cub Productions, a locally owned video company, and working with them, we created an entire season online. They did all of our productions with us, and we began by creating productions on stage like Tally's Folly, Home for the Holidays. We really looked to tell stories on our stage and film them. And then COVID got worse. And the union stepped in and said, well, you can no longer bring any actors into Syracuse, New York. You have to create your work remotely in actors' homes. And so you saw a slide back there called Annapurna. So let's back up and go back to Annapurna for a second. Because there's an example. We did that play a year ago. This is Dawn Stern and Stefan Walford. Stefan has performed at Syracuse Stage. He's nationally known as a leader in military veterans issues in the arts. Now, neither one of them look like that in real life. They are very, very well-kept people. We did a play called Annapurna, which is about a down on his luck college professor played by Stefan and his estranged wife played by Dawn. They are married in real life. And when the union said, you can't bring folks to Syracuse, we decided, okay, we got to go into people's homes. And so Dawn and Stefan live in a mobile home. And so we were able to wheel their home right into a sound studio in Syracuse. They allowed us to distress their home. They allowed us to distress them. And we created this wonderful project online by embedding cameras in their home. And none of us ever saw each other in real life. I was working here in my home. Our technicians were working in New York and in Syracuse Stage. We really created work in ways that we could. and then continue to create work online. Throughout the pandemic, we created a play called Twilight, which is by Anna Deavere Smith. And in that model, the actress lived in Chicago. So we created we drove a green screen to Chicago. We drove costumes and wigs and props to Chicago. We went into the studio at night when she wasn't there. We did all the work. She came in when we exited the room. She came in. We filmed it with technicians in New York, technicians in State College, creating work remotely. And those kind of innovations continued to define our work throughout the pandemic, using the resources that were available to us, the technology that was available to us. We learned a lot. It was a steep learning curve, but that allowed us to continue to create a season. Jill, you can just move through some of these extra slides here. This is a production of INU. This is when the union allowed us to come back into Syracuse. This was in the spring. Melissa Crespo, our new associate artistic director, directed this wonderful production of I and You, which was a return to allowing actors to come back to Syracuse and create work. But let's keep going through some of these slides here. Then we ended the digital season with Ethel Fugard's Master Harold and the Boys, a more ambitious project for us, more actors, sort of a more intense partnership with Black Cub Productions, because it was a more involved production with intricate sound. And so this really capped off our digital season allowed us to really get the attention of folks who would not necessarily pay attention to Syracuse stage. And that's a point you see on the screen here. One of the advantages that we learned during the digital time was accessibility. You know, when we produce plays at Syracuse stage, they are available to the folks who can pay the price of coming to a play at Syracuse stage, can get down to our space and see our work. That is, at the end of the day, a finite number of people. One of the things that digital production allows us to do is expand our reach. When we did Tally's Folly and the Wall Street Journal reviewed it, that production was seen in 48 states and 4 countries. And Terry Teachout, you know, gave us a wonderful quote that we will use forever about our digital season and about the impact that digital work can have. But of course, at the end of the day, digital work only goes so far. And in the spring, when we were looking, you know, we had the vaccine, things were starting to get better, the numbers were dropping in our county. And we believed, yes, you know, our thought then was COVID is in the rear view mirror. And in fact, what we learned was COVID was still sitting in the seat right beside us. So we announced our welcome back season. And as Jill, and you can go into the next slide, Jill. Jill mentioned, you know, COVID didn't go away, but nonetheless, we persisted. And so we have fewer subscribers. We have fewer folks attending our work right now. But we are determined. You know, the alternative is just to roll over and play dead, and we're not going to do that. We're going to practice all the safe protocols that we can and continue to create work. Live work safely in our 49th season. We have a new resident playwright, Kyle Bass. Kyle created a play, sort of a docudrama about the 1965 debate between James Baldwin and William F. Buckley. And Kyle had just written a play for young audiences about James Baldwin called Citizen James that we recorded and have been broadcasting around the country. And so this piece looks at that debate in a very fascinating way. It's really almost sort of a living document from that 65 debate. And we thought we need to start off our live work with our resident playwright and with this important work that has so much relevance to our lives today. So we kicked things off with a free community event to welcome folks back with this production of Faith of Our Fathers, Baldwin versus Buckley. And then we really dived right back into our subscription season, such as it was. You know, the protocols that we had to put in place to bring actors back into Syracuse. We have, you know, we throughout the rehearsal process, we are masked. And I can tell you, directing masked actors is something of a challenge when you're only seeing them from the eyes up. It creates a whole new dynamic in the rehearsal room. We couldn't let our actors get within 10 feet of any other human who wasn't in our protective bubble. our testing bubble. We're testing, we have to test three times a week. And so we can't do a lot of things. We can't do a lot of the audience engagement activities. We can't get the actors out into the community because the union just has certain restrictions about how we can engage. But we created a play called Eureka Day, and some of you may have seen it. We also taped it so that it was available for video broadcast as well. We're not going to do that anymore, but we did want to kick off the season with that with a taping of Eureka Day. So it was available online and live. And it was a play that we had landed on before the pandemic. And it was a play about vaccinations and a mumps outbreak in an elementary school, a private elementary school in the Bay Area in California. We had no idea that the play we were selecting to open to produce at Syracuse Stage when we originally picked it was a play that would be so on the nose when it comes to what's happening in our world. So doing Eureka Day as the beginning of our 49th season really illustrates what Syracuse Stage wants to do, which is to be a center for community exchange, ideas, and engagement through our artistic work. Theater gives us a way to talk about issues that other contexts don't always give us that freedom to respond, to react. And so Eureka Day really illustrates what it is that Syracuse Stage wants to do. And it was a comedy. So it allowed that, it was an easier entree into the topic that's on all of our minds all day long, every day. And so we were really excited to kick off our season with Eureka Day. And the playwright came out to see the work because he needed to see how his play was holding up in the post-pandemic. And that's a phrase that doesn't really, isn't applicable. But we were glad to welcome the playwright. And we learned that the play needed very few changes. Now we're running Matilda. And it's the middle of our season. And Jill, you can just go through these slides as we get into the real world here. I've already talked a little bit about Matilda, our co-pro with the Department of Drama. Emmy, we have two Matildas. One 12-year-old girl from New York who has Broadway credits bigger than just about anybody else you've ever seen. And one SU student, Emmy, you just saw her picture there. And Emmy, there's Emmy again. And there's Kathleen Wren is playing Miss Honey. This is a perfect example of what this production does. Kathleen is a professor of practice in drama department. Emmy is a senior, and they're working together here as professional actors. Emmy is playing a 9-year-old girl, and she's 21 years old, and she does a fantastic job in the role. Kathleen plays her mentor and teacher, Miss Honey. And so that relationship where faculty, professional actors, and students come together, and there's David Lowenstein playing Miss Trunchbull. It's a tour de force performance from David Lowenstein, one of the best actors I've ever worked with and is a faculty member of practice in the Department of Drama. And David's work in this production is a textbook lesson in amazing acting and craft. That's what I think is one of the many reasons to make Matilda part of the holiday season, to see the incredible work that the students, the faculty, and our professional actors bring to this production. Jill, you can just kind of move through those slides if you want. And I think that really embodies what Syracuse Stage and Syracuse Department of Drama are all about in our 49-year partnership. This is a look at the rest of the season that we are diving into now. We have every full intention of fully producing and realizing these plays. We're in the process of finishing up the casting for the plays. Somewhere Over the Border is a world premiere of a new musical by Brian Quijada. We're very excited about being able to do the world premiere of this new musical. It's a story about his mom, set in the 1970s. It's his mom's journey from El Salvador to the United States, told through the lens of The Wizard of Oz, with beautiful music that spans an entire range of genres and eras. I'm going down to the city on Sunday to start auditioning that production. We're excited to have Brian in residence with us for that. And then the other world premiere we're doing is a new play by Kyle Bass called Salt City Blues, which will wrap up our season. Kyle has written a fictional play about a city called Salt City that is in the midst of about to take down a highway that has divided its city for a number of years. And the impact of that on the neighborhoods, past, present, and future, is the subject of Kyle's really powerful drama that we are very excited to share with you in the spring. Jill, I think we've got just maybe one more slide here. because the other part of our work is really the part that's all, in many ways, the iceberg that's below the water is our educational programming and our community engagement programming. Our community engagement programming hasn't stopped. We've created a program called Syracuse Stories, where we've created online interviews with everybody from the police commissioner to the mayor to other civic leaders to talk about issues that are important to our community. All these things are available online. We have our educational program. This is a production of a play called The Girl Who Swallowed a Cactus, which we did online and also at the zoo and down at Salt City Market and other places around town to really continue to engage families, to engage communities, to engage children in the work of Syracuse Stage. And this work, although it, again, we haven't been able to go into the schools physically, but we've continued to create work online that helps parents, gives parents things to do with their families and their children, and continues to make Syracuse Stage a part of Central New York's life now and hopefully in the future. So that's kind of where we are with our COVID era update on what's happening at Stage. I think we're glad to entertain questions.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Jill. Let's start with our first question. Maybe you could both discuss the challenges in Central New York as local theater returns and how that may compare to trends you've heard about from peers, especially in big cities like Broadway.
You know, one silver lining of this time has been the continued strengthening and really reliance on relationships and conversations with our peers. I note Samara Hanna from Red House is on the call today. And I'll tell you, Samara and Mike Intaglietta from the Landmark and I have a text chain that you wouldn't believe. Go, what are you doing? What are you doing about policy? When are you thinking you might open? And so that relationship with our local peers, and there are more people locally who are involved too. We've been having periodic Zoom meetings with Symphoria, the Evers, everybody in that local arts community, but nationally too, where we might have two series of meetings and conferences a year with our peer theaters, the League of Resident Theaters. We're meeting on Zoom every week. Some efforts have grown to make contact with our federal representatives to continue driving aid where we can and really advocating for the field as a whole. So some of those peer relationships have grown exponentially in this time, for which we're both really grateful. And I think the trends we're seeing here do mirror those of other places, with the notable exception that we produced last year, albeit not in person. We were in a small minority of folks around the country who managed to still produce that subscription season for our patrons. But what we're seeing now is this cautiously optimistic return of patrons. The numbers we're seeing in terms of attendance mirror those of our national peers. Our policies in terms of proof of vaccination or negative test and masking throughout, no concessions in the theater, mirror those of our peers around the country. And I think that's been an important message for Bob and me to share with our board, with our staff, that, you know, in the moments in which it's encouraging or discouraging news, that we are really seeing trends that play out nationally and regionally.
You know, I don't want to get too political here, but I'm glad I'm creating theater in Central New York and not in Florida or Texas. You know, because we have a supportive governmental structure here that recognizes the need to keep people safe and provides guidelines and leadership in that regard. And some of our peer theaters in the South, you know, they can't have mask mandates in their theaters. They can't enforce vaccine mandates. And so they're hesitant to reopen. And many of them aren't reopening. And so in that sense, we are fortunate to be where we are geographically. But then, you know, if you look at it too, our numbers in Onondaga County are way too high. And that's influencing folks' decisions to come back to places like theater, where we're gathering, you know, in these communal experiences. And so that's impacting us negatively. So, you know, and to echo what Jill said, you know, and just in terms about how Jill and our peers and friends are in Central New York have come together to discuss ideas and plans. You know, I our national field, I'm on calls all the time, weekly, with my peers across the country, sharing ideas, sharing best practices, sharing horror stories, sharing successes. And we're bringing all this back to Central New York to try to influence how we can do work. So the communication in our field and the alliance in our field has never been stronger. This pandemic and this call to action from the We See You White American Theater document and movement have brought our field together in a way that I've never experienced in my 35 years in this field. It's been the best of times, and it's been the worst of times.
Okay, thank you. The next question, and we remind everyone, please post your questions in the chat addressed to Matt. Question is, were there any innovations that you utilized during virtual performances that you have been able to incorporate into live performances?
I'll jump in on that one. Yes, folks were able to see that in our production of Eureka Day, and they're going to be able to see that in our production of Yoga Play, which is the play we go into rehearsal at the end of this month and opens in January, a play that Melissa Crespo is directing. We, in both these productions, we're incorporating technology, live feed technology, recorded technology into the live performance, in many ways creating a hybrid version that we've never done at Syracuse Stage in such an in-depth way. So a lot of the learnings that we took away from the technological advancements that came along during the last season, and the learnings and the partnerships that we through trial and error learned about in the digital season are continuing to influence how the work is being created now. Absolutely. You know, you give theater folks a new toy and we just want to play with it. So that's what we're doing.
Okay, and as a follow-up to that, do you see the opportunity in the future of possibly offering both live performance and then taped delivery post live performance or at the same time?
We may answer differently. You go first, Bob.
Well, I love the way that video on demand theater provides accessibility to folks who otherwise can't access the work of Syracuse Stage. That is a win that we can't ignore or abandon. But two things. One, not every theater, not every rights holder will give you permission to do a live broadcast or a recorded broadcast. For instance, the rights holders to Matilda, because there's a movie coming out of Matilda in a year, said there's no way you're going to record this and show it to the world. Yeah. The play that goes wrong later in our season, no way you're going to show it to the world because it's still running in New York. And so not every rights holder will let you do it, a recorded version. And it is really expensive to create a good recorded production of a live performance. And that, you know, people don't flock to these recordings.
Yeah, I echo everything Bob said. And we have a little bit of a case study in last year in that we did produce six pieces virtually. And while our patrons were generous, we watched their engagement with those video offerings diminish further as the year went on, to the point where I think by the end, it's starting to be spring, folks wanted to go outside. I'm not sure 1,000 people started and played the video for the last play. So balancing the economic realities, the opportunity to work with the copyright holder to offer it, and our continuing commitment to accessibility is a challenge. We have a little further challenge in that so many of the very finest theaters in the world are offering their content online too. And while we think ours holds up, when you've got the National Theater, Lincoln Center opening their whole archives, there's a lot of content out there. So we'll continue to consider it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, thank you. The next question, could you talk more about Salt City Blues, the play that is coming up in the spring? That plot sounds very interesting and familiar. How much of it will be taken directly from what's happening here?
Well, Kyle Bass, the playwright, has made a very, very clear point of saying it's a work of fiction. However, it's set in a city called Salt City, and it's about the issues that arise when a highway cuts through a neighborhood And then when that highway is torn down, what are the implications for that neighborhood and the people? So Salt City Blues is a place set in a bar. The inhabitants of that, as so many great works of theater are, the inhabitants, the regulars who come and go out of this neighborhood bar, sort of reveal their own journeys in this fictional Salt City. There are place names that will sound very familiar, but you know, a playwright has the license to create drama from germs of real stories, real events, and then spin them from that. So this is a play about displacement. This is a play about community. This is a play about coming together. This is ultimately a very hopeful story of redemption that Kyle has created. We, of course, will. One of the things that Joanne Yarrow, our director of community engagement, is so good at, is, and our entire engagement and education team, is we'll be creating a series of conversations in our community surrounding Salt City Blues, really hoping, again, in the way that we have done in the past when we've been able to create work that speaks to issues that are very timely in our community. We look forward to exchanging in the marketplace of ideas at Syracuse Stage. And I also want to add too that in addition to Salt City Blues, we're doing another production isn't part of our subscription season, but it's called The Most Beautiful Home Maybe. And it's a play based on the book Exiled in America by a wonderful arts leader, arts creator, and activist by the name of Mark Valdez. We're so thrilled that this play, which is a story that looks at housing inequality, housing shortage, it looks at homelessness, but not so much, and not in any sort of, oh no, that sounds so burdensome and so tough and we can't untangle. This play is done with love, with humor, with engagement. And this is a play that we've created with our partners, the Mixed Blood Theater in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's going to be here just for one weekend in June. And it will live in conversation with Kyle's play, a play about how we get to call home. And it looks at folks who sometimes don't have a place to call home. And so this play, The Most Beautiful Home Maybe, and Salt City Blues are a conversation. We'll be wrapping up our 49th season with a conversation, with a community conversation that we think is incredibly timely for us to be having and us to be engaging in.
As Bob started to speak about Most Beautiful Home Maybe, I put a link to it in the chat for those of you who can see that, because it's a really different type of project from that which you might see on our main stage during the year. And we're excited that it'll feature a lot of the content has been generated by community conversations and workshops that are already happening with folks who are working on policy around housing and housing insecurity in this community now. So Joanne Yarrow, who Bob mentioned, has already hosted two of what will be three panels on these matters of housing policy in our community. And really that content will find its way into the production itself.
Thank you. That's excellent. We have a question. Is there an opportunity for an outdoor production during a warm weather month?
Oh, you mean July. We've talked about that. In other places that I've worked, I've done that. And I actually, the risks of doing outdoor productions are so great because there's Mother Nature that you can't control. I would love to do, every time I go into a park, you know, my eye always goes to, oh, we could perform there. It's always in my previous job in Arkansas, we created a project in the summers where we took the works of William Shakespeare to state parks around the state, and we performed for free in some beautiful settings in Arkansas. And that was a way to sort of help folk. People flock to the state parks. They were like, oh, I don't want to see Shakespeare. So we brought Shakespeare to the state parks. And that was a way of sort of demystifying theater for a lot of folks in my previous job. And I would love to do outdoor work. There are some pretty significant challenges when it comes to it. It's incredibly expensive because you have to usually create everything from scratch. And you've got to provide the right kind of, dressing rooms for the actors and all the infrastructure that comes with performing live. But I'd love to do some outdoor work. And I think our community would respond to it. So it's been on my mind as something that one of these days I'd love to do.
Okay. The next question, has it been challenging getting actors and casts to come to Syracuse, to Central New York, for the upcoming schedule of performances?
You know, Bob mentioned earlier that the local government and local communities' endorsement of and enforcement of certain COVID-related policies has been incredibly helpful for us in that regard, where we have found performers hesitant to go to some of the other states and communities Bob mentioned earlier. The fact that the protocols in place in our county and at our landlord, Syracuse University's facilities, have been really assuring. Additionally, Syracuse Stage is committed to being even more conservative in our COVID protocols. For example, the union does not necessarily require us to be testing as often as we are, and yet we persist. We're lucky to have a partnership with what is now named the Collegian Hotel, just a block up from the theater, which used to be the Genesee Grand for years. And they have been really responsive in making sure that our artist housing is COVID safe as much as anything can be these days. That housing has always been an asset for us in recruiting folks to come to Syracuse. Admittedly, sometimes saying Syracuse in January doesn't excite people the way it might excite those of us on this call. Bob has been in those audition rooms and in the direct conversations with artists and agents. You may have a perspective there too.
Yeah, in general, actors enjoy coming to Syracuse and they enjoy coming to Syracuse Stage. It's a very welcoming community for our guest artists. And we work hard at Syracuse Stage to make our environment welcoming. Frankly, we pay well. We are close enough to the city that if they've got a commercial shoot, they can run back and do that shoot and get right back to Syracuse in the same day. So we are a good gig for actors at Syracuse Stage. We almost always get our first choices of actors in the roles. And the actors that have come up to work for us during this last several weeks, I've really appreciated, as Jill mentioned, the protocols we've put in place to do our best to keep them safe. And they, many of them lived through the pandemic in New York City, which was an hellacious time for so many people in the city. And so they have that, experience. And so they are cautious. But we work hard to make sure that we do our best to provide everything that they need and to make them feel welcomed in our city. And so, we've been very fortunate that folks are willing to come up here. And then let's be frank about it. Our field with the unemployment, the way that it is, folks need work. A lot of folks have left the profession in the last year and a half. Those that remain, are eager to work and they're thrilled to be able to work in Syracuse.
Okay, I think we have time for one last question. And the question is, what techniques do you use to motivate actors for virtual performances as opposed to live theater? It must have such a different feel for the performers.
What they've all said, particularly those, for those shows we were able to tape on our stage and then produce live. Like Tally's Folly and INU and Master Harold. They do all this work and we're in a theater, so it seems normal. And we're rehearsing in a way that seems normal. But in a year where you're doing it live, you do all the rehearsal, you do all those dress rehearsals, you're ready to roll, and then the audience arrives and there's applause and there's validation and there's excitement. Well, in a filmed production, you get up to that point and you go home and there's no validation. There's no applause. There's no, theater, the art form lives in that space where actors and audience come together and breathe together. That's where the art happens. And whenever you create remote work or when you create work without an audience, It's half of the art form. And as a director, as creative artists, we have to work to get those actors to that place of artistry without the audience. And that is a tough row to hoe. And I've been so proud of the actors who have done the work and how we have worked with them. It just takes a little more detail in the rehearsal and the technical work. We have to do all we can. And the five or six of us sitting out in the house, the technicians and the designers and myself, we have to make up for the other 400 people who aren't in the room and give those actors all the love and feedback we can to help them really create their art. So it is an adventure. And I got to say, for the actors, it's not very satisfying. They're pros and they do the job they need to do. And I think they do it well. But it has been a challenge and one that we're so glad to have people back in the building.
Jill and Bob, thank you so much for just a wonderful presentation and really exciting information about upcoming performances, and certainly encourage everybody to attend Syracuse Stage. I'd like to remind everyone, if you are not able to attend virtually today, the presentations of Thursday Morning Roundtable will continue to be recorded and available through the Office of Community Engagement webpage. The forums are also recorded through a partnership with WCMY Radio, and the audio versions can be found on WCMY's Thursday Morning Roundtable webpage. I'd like to thank our guests of TMR who come every week and attend. This session today is the last one for the fall 2021 semester. So thank you so much for being with us. We will be back in 2022 and we will be communicating out a schedule over the next several weeks. We wish everybody a very happy holidays. Stay well and see you in the new year.